This is Mame Warren. Today is the 15th of July, 1996. I'm in Lexington, Virginia with Pat Leggett. I presume it's Patricia?
Yes.
And why don't we just jump into what you were just talking about? Let's talk about Mr. Whitehead and the Reeves Collection.
All right. I will paraphrase this by saying that I followed a husband who was a trustee. And at that time, you served 6 years and then renewed for another six. It's a 12-year term. And I'm on my 10th year. I will be finished this October. So the combination is 22 years connected with this university, which gives a wonderful overview of just what's happened. And one of the highlights, of course, was the acquisition of the Reeves Collection and watching the man who orchestrated it, Jim Whitehead, educate himself, expose this university to a segment of population that probably wouldn't have been through the porcelains. And then taking a trip to Taiwan to take about 300 plus pieces back to Taiwan. And of course, this was export porcelain. So the Chinese really weren't that familiar with it. And of course, Taiwan at that time, was really, the leadership came from the Chinese nobility that had to leave mainland China. So it was a fascinating group of people.
And when are we talking about? What year was this?
I'm trying to think, Mame, when it was. I feel like it was about, 14 years ago.
Okay,
we can look it up. But you have to check that. And time has a way of getting away.
Yes, it does.
But we went with we went with Jim and Celeste and Bob Huntley and Evelyn. And I guess totally there would be maybe 12 or 14 of us.
Now, what was the purpose of taking the porcelain to Taiwan?
The Taiwanese
was it an exhibit?
Requested us as part of their cultural history, I guess.
Was it an exhibit that was being taken?
We took an exhibit.
I see.
And it was shown in Taiwan, and I think we let it for 3 months. And people were lined up to see it. It was a very popular exhibit. And we were guests of the government, I guess, for maybe a week. And they would meet us in the morning about 7 o'clock, and we said goodbye to them about 11 o'clock in the evening. It was a fabulous experience. And watching that group of people trying to set up a new life for themselves in Taiwan, not being able to go back to mainland China, and the appreciation of the porcelain, and the porcelain itself was a wonderful history lesson on our export-import of China at that time. And we got to see things that the normal tourists wouldn't see. And it was just, we ate Taiwanese food. It was just very interesting. We were not with the women very often, the Chinese women. But one night they had a lovely dinner party for us. Of course, we were dined everywhere we went. And the Chinese women were in attendance. And most of the women, all spoke beautiful English, of course. And most of the women had been educated at Vassar Smith, all our loveliest, finest education institutions for women. And I remember Mr. Ju, who was the artist in residence at the time, a Chinese painter. We all know of him, and he still is retired here in Lexington. He told us how to behave. And one thing we knew not to do was to praise anything that was Chinese in any great extent, because they would try to give it to you. So at this lovely dinner party, the most stunning Chinese women were there in their beautiful brocades and silks. And across from me was this lovely lady who'd been educated at Vassar, and she had on the most beautiful jade necklace. Each heavy link was another color of jade, and then at the bottom was this gorgeous dragon. And I tried not to look at it very often, but your eyes were just drawn to it. It was such a magnificent piece of jewelry. And finally she said to me, would you like? She said, you've been admiring my necklace. Well, there was dead silence at the table. And she said, would you like to see it? And I must have had a guardian angel because I said, oh, I would love to see it. I said, if you would just let me wear it through dessert. And she did. And we had just such a good time with that. But I'll never forget how generous she was and how cordial and hospitable. And it just sort of bonded the dinner party. We had a wonderful time with that necklace, and it was absolutely exquisite. But I think of that very often when I think of that trip. But it was a wonderful experience. And as I say, the Chinese were so happy to see this part of their history. So that was wonderful.
What a charming story. Well, now you're saying how lovely and educated these women were. I understand that you had a lovely education yourself. I'm going to jump back in time now. Now, you were a Randolph-Macon girl.
I went to Randolph-Macon.
Now, we're doing the Washington and Lee story here.
Right.
But the Washington and Lee story would not be complete without talking about the women's colleges and their relationship to Washington and Lee. So tell me about what it was like to be a Randolph-Macon girl.
Well, it was very nice. I graduated in 1953, and it was very lovely because my husband was at Washington Lee, and my husband-to-be, and Lynchburg was just over the mountain from Lexington, so that was very exciting. But I think when you look back, the state of Virginia is extremely fortunate. We have Randolph-Macon, Sweetbriar, Hollins, three very fine women's schools. And I remember when Washington Lee went co-ed, and my husband was on that board at the time, how careful Washington Lee was to think of how their going co-ed would affect the enrollment of these three particular schools, because they were in the neighborhood. And they agreed that they would not take women applying from these schools as transfers, which I thought was a very thoughtful thing to do at that time. The board, that present board during co-education, was very thorough, and they really studied this, and that's why I think it was so successful. And I can remember, of course it was controversial, and now that we're seeing the grandfathers with their granddaughters who are accepted, they've turned 360 degrees. But at the time, there was a very strong feeling against co-education, understandably so, I think, from the old guard. But that board of trustees answered every negative letter with a personal note. And I thought that was a wonderful effort, and a very important effort. And it sort of speaks to me of the Washington and Lee, mystique, if you will. How people are aware of each other and thoughtful of each other, and how things work out slowly sometimes, but in the long run for the best.
Well, I did a little background research for our interview, and you're right, in your husband's and your trusteeship, you spanned quite a few years. And now Gordon was on during the first vote for co-education when it was turned down, and well, maybe not the first vote, but in the 1976 vote.
Well, they had considered it several times.
Yes.
And I don't know that ever came to a vote, the first consideration. I don't know. You may have to correct me on that. But when it actually came to vote, he was part of that, and he was part of a study. And then after it was voted on by the board, there were several years there that they were very alert about how women were being received, just small incidents where there are enough ladies' rooms for them, was security strengthened, as perhaps it should be, with ladies on the campus, and those little things. They really watched it very carefully. It wasn't something they voted and then left to the administration or the campus personnel. They were involved with it.
Can you describe for me what it was like during that period, as the decision was coming closer, I mean, surely there must have been a lot of drama going on around your house. Were there a lot of phone calls? Were people calling and trying to lobby your husband one way or the other?
Well, I think there was some of that. No question, I know there was. But I think among the board, there was no great try to lobby individual members. And my time in serving on the board, there's never been that element. The wonderful part about the board is everybody speaks their mind. There's no hesitation. And sometimes you take a view that's not very popular. But we listen. And then you vote your conviction. And often, if it's very close, we agree that we make it unanimous, if those people that are dissenting. And that's a lovely thing to be able to do. You speak your mind, but there's no pressure. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for.
I wondered if there were pressure from the alumni rather than from fellow board members.
Oh, I think there was. No question. This was a hard thing to do. It was a big step. And I think John Wilson was a very courageous man to undertake it so early in his career. But maybe that's when it had to be done. But after it was done, there was a strong feeling, you know, from the old boys. This university was taking a major turn. But it didn't take very long for everybody to realize what a good move. And I'll tell you, the thing that really convinced my husband was when the faculty said, "We're not getting the students we want to teach." And that's the deciding factor, I think, for him.
Were you here in Lexington that day?
I was. Mm-hmm.
Can you take me back there?
No, I really can't very well. I think you'd probably have to talk to a board member that was. I remember the press was here. I guess that there was so much going on before it as far as discussion. My husband was so convinced it was the right thing to do that I didn't. There was no persuasion for him. He knew that that should be. Of course, we have three daughters, and they certainly talked to him long and hard.
Tell me about that.
Well, Gordon's had a wonderful opportunity of having his three daughters tell him what books to read, what movies to see. They have a wonderful rapport. And I think they have really, there's never been a feeling of women being second rate in his mind. Maybe second rate is a poor choice, but he feels that women have the capability of doing whatever they want to do and should have the opportunity. And we brought our girls up that way. And he had no sisters, so it was a wonderful growing experience for him.
And were your daughters strong lobbyists on this issue? How old were they at that time?
They were too young for that. And we sort of have some family rules and have growing up that we try to keep things within the family. And I know people did ask our oldest daughter how she felt. Mm-hmm. And she kept saying she knew that her father was going to make the right decision.
A diplomat.
She is. Mm-hmm. Still is. Will always be. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just seems like that must have been a time of such high drama.
Mm-hmm. It was.
And emotion.
Mm-hmm. But you know, it was... I don't think there was any feeling of upsetness during that time. I think it was a strong move and it was done with great resolution. And there was no wavering. And that was the key to the success, I think.
Yeah, I've had the privilege of talking to quite a few people who were involved with it. And
do they feel that way?
Oh yes, oh yes. And I've gotten real chills up and down my spine.
Yeah.
And listening to some people. Now, what year was it that you came on the board?
Well, let's see, I go off in 96, so it was 86.
86. Mm-hmm. So I understand that you have a lot of expertise in looking at the physical plant of the campus. And so did you get involved in whatever changes were happening?
Oh, I mean, my first job was to be the board liaison to the Fraternity Renaissance. And I spent my first summer, and I was appointed to this, I think, basically because I lived in Lynchburg and I could come over that mountain with ease. And being a woman, I think, was probably another reason. And I think at that time there were 3 women on the board. There were. And Buddy Atkins and I did a inspection of the existing conditions of the fraternity house. And I was absolutely appalled. I had known what they were like because I dated at these fraternity houses when I was in college. But as a mother, you look at it a little differently, having raised children. And it was an appalling situation. I remember we got to one house and the boys had left for the summer and just swept everything that was left over into the front hall. And I know there was a dead animal under all that. So going through those houses, if we hadn't renovated the fraternity houses, we would have had to have built another dormitory and another dining hall. So in a way, it was a given. We had to do them. It was an expensive undertaking, as you know. I think the price tag was about $13 million. But they were in such deplorable shape. I mean, windows knocked out. So it was an amazing operation. But that was my first taste of being on the board at Washington Lee.
That must have been quite a taste.
And I hope I convinced some board members of the necessity, you know, that we didn't have a choice.
So what did you do? What was your
day? Well, then we worked with the architect on just what we do. We tried to control costs wherever we could. We talked to the fraternity members about how they had to maintain it. We had a set of rules that we put together on just how it would work, how that Washington Lee would own the houses, and just what the responsibilities of the fraternities were, of their national would be, and the stipulation they had to have house mothers, which was a real plus, because there was some control over that. And I remember one of the ladies that was a house mother was deaf, and I thought how marvelous that was, you know, that she could just unplug on the weekend. And there was a lovely sort of fraternity among the house mothers. You know, that's a tough life, I would think. But, you know, some just had a wonderful time with it. And they had nice apartments, which we were sure were nice, working with the architect. And it was a good experience learning about how one builds the best fraternity house, practically, as economically, and that would withstand abuse with all those boys running up and down steps and kicking doors, you know, and that sort of thing.
Now, you alluded to that you knew what the fraternity houses were like back in the 50s. When you came into them in the 80s, were you seeing the same conditions you saw back then?
Well, I saw them with a house mother. In 1950s, early 50s, when I was in college, they were very different, because they had house mothers.
Can you describe what they were like then?
Well, you had dinner, and the house mother sat there at the end of the table. And there were some controls. And when I was at Randall Meg, we were not allowed to drink. So you didn't drink. There was plenty of drinking, but we didn't drink. And I never went up on the second floor, of course. And I saw the house mother being present at weekend parties. And it was not, I'm sure they were rowdy, you know, but I didn't date boys that were great party boys. But there were those, certainly. And there was drinking, there was drunkenness. But they hadn't gotten out of hand when there was nobody there to say, you know, you can't do that, or you will sit down and put a napkin on your lap and so forth. I think they got out of hand.
And so the physical environment had changed radically when you came in.
Yes, no question.
So can you give me an example of going into one of the houses, what you saw? I mean, you've described...
Well, you know, there were some windows broken all year, and the winter winds would come in. There were furniture broken. You know, it just was the smell of just mustiness. They weren't as clean as they should be. Bathroom fixtures were broken. They were in great disrepair. And it wasn't the most favorite thing I've done as a board member. It was an educational one. But it's been great. It's been great fun working. I used to serve on the student affairs. And that was wonderful. I've served on the academic affairs and have been aware of what this faculty does and the wonderful ratio between students and faculty. And then I got to Capital Projects, and eventually you're made a chairman of that. You know, after you've been on the board long enough, they make you a chairman. And I've seen buildings go up, which has been extremely exciting, and I've been very involved with the new Science Center. I had to learn what chillers were and be able to explain to the board why we needed to buy another chiller when that was sort of above the budget. And I learned a lot.
It sounds like going back to school all over again.
Well, you know, anything, the lovely thing about being on the board of Washington, you're worked as a trustee. And that's as it should be. And they do work you, and you stay involved. I've just been up to Skylark with an executive meeting, working on the five-year plan. And it's a remarkable university. Tremendous talent of people here.
Tell me about is it called the Student Activities Committee?
It's Campus Life.
Campus Life Committee.
And that's the only committee you really have any direct contact with students.
Tell me about that. I've never talked to anybody who was involved
in Campus
that.
Life?
And I didn't know they were involved.
Well,
tell me
course,
about that.
Well, of course, Dave Howson is there, being the dean of students. The president of student government reports. You hear about honor violations. You hear about anything that involves student life. You know, whether they... Now, I'm not on that committee now, but sorority housing is something that's come to the forefront. Sororities want housing. Problems of drinking, how can we combat those? That would be an issue that might come up. They report on fancy dress, any of the things that students involved. And of course, they run their honor system. And that's very impressive to me. And you hear about how they're handling that.
And what would a report on the honor system entail? How would that be
presented
to you?
Well, they would tell you...
Who is they? Who would come and talk?
The present student government reports this. Mm-hmm. And he would talk about what violations they've been and how they were handled, and if students withdrew or were dismissed. Which is, the board should know this.
And is there drama involved with that?
No.
Have there ever been any?
Because they handle it totally. Mm-hmm. And there are some cases, you know, that happened in Lexington, like the time the girl was raped by the BMI cadet, you know, that happened several years ago. That made the papers. And of course, no school or university is insulated from things that happen like that, whether a child is killed in an automobile wreck or, you know, when you have that many young people on a campus, things come up.
Yeah, they sure do. So, I've never been to a board meeting. Do you have a parade of people come through and give you reports?
What you do is, we have committee meetings. Capital Projects is a committee. Campus Life is a committee, budget and audit, investment, Academic Affairs as a committee, and all of us meet as committees. And then at the full board meeting, the chairman of that committee reports, because none of us are able to go to all of them, you see. So then we get an overview. And then whatever action items come up, we vote on. And the dean of the law school will give his report, and the dean of admissions, and we get a picture of what's going on.
Well, I know they sure keep you busy, because I was hoping to talk to you last time you were here for a board meeting, and they wouldn't let me get anywhere close to you.
No, every inch of that time is taken, and the response in the of the board and the attendance, very few people miss. It's amazing to me, these busy, busy men. They're here.
It seems
And all of us have terrible thinking spells when we go off. Just terrible thinking spells.
Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, you just hate to leave these people. You know, it's just a wonderful family of people. And you feel very close to you. And there's just a camaraderie, no question. Well, I remember asking one of the men, board members, I said, what would you all think if I wore slacks to one of these meetings? No woman has done it yet. And he said, oh, please don't do that. I said, okay, I won't do it. But that's wonderful, I thought. And they're very supportive. And they know what's happened to your life. When I became president of Garden Club of Virginia, they wrote me notes to tell me how happy they were. And here, they weren't from Virginia. I don't know how they found out all about this. But they're very supportive.
It is. The whole community is wonderful.
It's remarkable. My father's in the Army, so we traveled around a lot. And I feel that same way about Lynchburg. It's hard to have a private life, and I'm sure that's the case in Lexington, too. But it's awfully nice to have people care.
Yeah, everybody knows, and especially...
Everybody knows.
Especially being the new person. I found it very intimidating the first few weeks I was here because everybody knew who I was.
Sure.
And here I was trying to learn all these names, and finally Frank said, Mame, it's okay. You don't have to learn everybody's name the first week. Okay, all right. Everybody's saying, hi, Mame, and I'm going, oh, who's that? I know, I think, do I know that person? But it is, it's a wonderfully friendly place. Tell me about the campus itself. Can you remember the first time you ever walked on this campus and what your impression was?
As a young person?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know how anybody cannot be struck by that row of columns on that beautiful hill of green grass. It's a... Even though you're probably at 18, 19, that's not something you look for, or maybe is in your vocabulary of appreciation, but I was struck by it. And the Lee Chapel. And I remember visiting the Lee Chapel with my grandmother, who came from Virginia Stock, lived in Richmond, and she brought me down here as a child of 8 years old to go through Lee Chapel, because it was that important to her. And I had that background. And I think the size, I remember thinking what a wonderful size Washington was. And then I had fun dating here, too. That's
Tell
a very
me about
happy
that.
Memory. And fancy dress. We used to have costumes. And I can remember that was the weekend you had to have a date at fancy dress. Everybody worked hard. Even if you didn't like the boy very much, you certainly flattered and worked to get an invitation. And they would get your measurements, we all lied about our measurements, of course, and send those to a costumer, I guess, who provided the costumes in New York City. And when you got here for fancy dress, I guess it was Friday afternoon, your date brought you your costume. Well, if you weren't dating somebody in student government or, you know, who had a real important job, your costume wasn't much. But it was great fun to put on. Of course, they didn't fit. The measurements were all wrong, which was partly your fault. But at night it didn't matter, and they went to great lengths to decorate the gym so it didn't look like a gym, and it didn't. And we all came out in costume, and it was wonderful fun. They don't do costumes now, I believe, but there's been talk about getting back to it.
I hope so. I think we should do it for 1999, don't you?
Oh, it would be a great idea.
I think that should be the goal for Fancy Dress.
Oh, it would be a great idea. Exactly.
You take it on.
Thank
It'll
you,
happen if you.
Thank you.
It'll happen if you
well,
take
I'm
it on.
Well, I'm delighted that the renovation of the chapel is going to be a keystone to that celebration, too, which is overdue.
But let's stay with Fancy Dress.
Oh,
tell me about Fancy Dress. I mean, take me into Fancy Dress.
Well, you would go in, of course, and see. I'm trying to think of what the theme was. I want to say, I can't remember, but you can find all that out. Well, it was King Arthur's court, but we were all in these dresses, and you would walk in, and I mean, they had done staging and painting. They'd worked like dogs. I don't know how they studied. Maybe study just was not thought of for the month before Fancy Dress, but a real production, and a top-name band, you see, had to be, and it was just a magical evening. You'd walk into the setting, and you were a member of King Arthur's court, and I don't know, in those days, and I've often asked our daughters about this, we danced with everybody. They don't do that anymore for some reason. But we went as a group. We had a wonderful group of friends, and we'd all dance with each other, and we had a wonderful time. And there was just something romantic. You know, Fancy Dress just was romantic. It was the weekend on the Southern College scene, if you will. Did you ever go? Were you here? You weren't in the area, were
no,
you?
No, no. I went to school in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. No, I went this year for the first Fancy Dress. I had a wonderful time, but I wished I'd been wearing a costume.
Oh, exactly. Oh, a costume ball was what it was. And I think it's probably the only time I went to a costume ball. Was the few fancy dresses that I went to when I was in college.
How'd you get over here?
How did we get over here? Let's see, from Randolph Macon, we couldn't have cars as freshmen. But you could have cars after a freshman. I didn't have a car at college, but I guess I came with friends. I don't even remember getting here. It was just the getting here. And we stayed at boarding houses, you know.
What kind of boarding houses?
Well, just whoever would take you in. All these little houses used to take in people. Faculty was good about taking people in. But see, we had to be in at a certain time if you went to Randolph Macon.
So even when you were in Lexington, you were following Randolph Macon mm-hmm. rules.
Right.
Now who was making sure of that?
Well, you were on your honor.
So you had an honor system too?
Indeed we did. And drinking was a part of the honor system, which should or should not have been the case. I have mixed emotions about that. But it was a magical night and fun and what it should be at college.
How about sporting events? Would you come over for sporting events?
Well, I've always loved lacrosse. We come over for lacrosse games. As a young person, they were on the weekend, and if you were up here, you went to the sporting events, of course.
Mm-hmm. And how'd you meet your husband?
I met my husband. He went to Camp Virginia, which is right here at Rockridge Baths, and I went to Camp Okahawas. They were 14 miles apart. And we had a mixer one night a month, and the boys would come to us, and the next month we'd go to them, and that's where I met him. We had a dance.
So this was even before Washington and Lake?
14 years old, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you didn't meet while you were Washington, while he was in.
That's right, and when we got to college, we were dating other people. And so he dated a lot of people, and I dated a lot of people. But I did come to Fancy Dress with him. That was good.
So, what was it like? Did you have a sense of how seriously or unseriously they took being Washington and Lee students? I mean,
how serious do you take being a college student? I don't know.
Well, did they present themselves as Washington and Lee men? Was that a big deal, or were they just college students?
Well, I think you categorize, don't you? BMI cadets. You dated BMI cadets. That was a whole another thing. I liked dating at Washington Lee. I also dated the Naval Academy. I dated at Duke. Washington Lee was very different from Duke. First of all, it was easy to get to. It was not as big, which appealed to me. You got to know the boys better.
Well,
if you wanted a blind date, you could find out in a hurry what they were like.
Oh, tell me what you mean by that.
Well, if you had a blind date, you knew somebody that was over here, you know, and you could say somebody, a brother or cousin, and you could say, tell me about Joe Blow, what's he like, you know, before you really committed. It was easier to do that here than it would be to Duke, because Duke wasn't a small community. And when you came over here, you knew people, you know. Maybe you do that at other great big schools. I didn't see that as much at UVA. But you could come across this campus and see people you knew more often than not.
See students you knew?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Did you get to know any faculty?
Yes, I did. I got to know faculty that were some of my husband's favorites.
Can you remember who?
I remember
they
Steve Stevenson, who would have us to supper. He'd have his students to supper. Oh.
And you'd be invited along?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that before.
I think the faculty is very accessible to these students. Not just, well, not in class time. They're available. And relationships grow. That's one thing I've really known about this school. I see that as a board member.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go with a faculty member anywhere across campus, you know, and very often I will, he stops and talks to the student, or she stops and talks to the student. It's wonderful. They're very lucky. And I think that's exceptional here, truly. And when I bring students, you know, when you're on the board, students do ask you to intervene for them if they are seeking admission. And if they don't have a chance, I don't do that. I ask them what their board scores are and what their grades were in high school. And if they don't have a chance, I discourage it right away. Or I will call the admissions office and ask them what kind of a chance, if they're coming early decision. And if they don't have a good chance, I tell them, start looking around other schools. Because I don't want them to have their heart set. But one of the selling points, of course, it's a very popular place to get in. You don't need to sell it. But when students come to me, and that's I enjoy doing that for the university. I enjoy interviewing students and writing letters for them. I will not write a letter for a student I don't know. You know, if they're interested in Washington Lee and they tell me their junior year, I say, okay, let's meet a couple of times. And I ask, I said, I'm going to ask about you. I'm going to call your high school counselor. And therefore, if they're a good student, I can work hard to get them in.
Well, that must be exciting to play a role like that.
It is fun. It's also hard if they don't get in. It's very hard. But I think you've got to be very open and fair. And they appreciate it. I would. And I had a wonderful young girl that I would have taken in a minute who went early decision. I said, you haven't got a chance to get in early decision because I called up here. And I said, I'm not sure you have a chance in getting in at all. I said, but I want you to know that. And if it was up to me, I'd take you tomorrow. And she did not get in, but she knew it. You know, her sister's come and gotten in. And she's a precious girl and has done very well where she went, but it's not a school that Washington Lee was academically. So it was a happy decision, but it's tough in the choosing. It's very tough.
So you've seen Washington Lee change academically.
Oh, no question.
Tell me about that.
Well, you know the changes since they went co-educational.
Well, you tell me.
Well, as I'm just quoting you, men that have been here said they wouldn't have a chance to get in here now. I'm not sure that's true. But it's much more difficult. They're taking the top students. you know, this is no safety school. It used to be a safety school. By that I mean, you know, a mom, child would put it on their list. And if they were a C student or C plus student, they could probably get in, the boys. Not anymore.
What do you think the attraction is to a student from Iowa who isn't an alumni student?
That's interesting. And talking to students, occasionally we will have a meal with them. They'll have lunch with us. And I will ask this, particularly minority students. Minority students are usually receive financial aid. If I was a minority student, and I had a wonderful talk with this girl, woman, excuse me, I shouldn't call them girls, they're women, said, you know, Ms. Leggett, I'm a double minority. And I said, I've never heard that before. And of course, she was black and a female. And I said, that's so interesting. Unfortunately, this woman had a chip on her shoulder, and I was sorry to see that. And she was being very critical of a lot of policy, and I think that's was unfortunate. And it was, therefore, Washington was not the experience that I'd hoped she'd have. But nonetheless, a minority student would not come to Lexington. Why would you come? It's not a metropolitan area that they could really enjoy. There are very few minorities here. I'm sorry, I'd like to see that increase. And I think with good financial aid, an increase in financial aid, we'll get more. And time's changing too. But 10 years ago, it was very tough to get a minority student. And if I was black, I wouldn't want to come to Lexington, Virginia. I'd rather go to a big city, a big university. So, but what was your question? The changes that I've seen?
What's the attraction?
The attraction. I think the attraction for me, and I have to speak about this personally, is the student-faculty ratio, the quality of education, the caliber of the faculty, the curriculum. It's a varied curriculum, a wonderful curriculum. The physical plant. If I was an art student, I'd worry, because we need to work on that facility and the music facility. And we're going to be doing something about that. But that now needs some concentrated effort. I think it's a beautiful campus, and I think at the age of 18 or 19, that would be leave an impression on me. I like the size. I don't know at the age of 18 that I would have been adjusted enough to go to a huge university. And there's just a flavor here. I brought a young man who did not get in over here. And it was a rainy day, and he was going to go look at Duke. We had a child that went to Duke. And I said, okay, while you're spending a few days with me, his father and my brother were in Vietnam together for a long time. And we sort of had a bond develop because of that relationship. I said, while you're looking at Duke, let's go up and look at Washington. I just want to show you what it looks like. We walked across the campus, and out of 20 students that we passed, 18 said good morning to him. That impressed this youngster very much. He was very cosmopolitan. He was a wonderful javelin thrower and had been working with the Denmark coach, Olympic coach, on javelin throwing. So he'd been around. When he left, it was his first choice. I think for the same reasons I'm telling you, I met faculty members, and I introduced him to faculty members. He had a personal tour of the campus, and he had an interview. Lots of schools don't have interviews. Washington Lee insists on it.
You turn the tape over.
Okay.